Welcome to the Humanity Matters podcast, where we discuss and reflect on faith and philosophy, leadership and social issues. We want to engage in ideas and what it means to be a free human being in the pursuit of human flourishing. For more information, please visit our website, philipfletcher.org. And now, the Humanity Matters podcast. All right, so two things today. Get y'all out here, especially today. AC ain't working. So, you read your email? Everybody get the email?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, your paper is due next week. All right. Yeah, you didn't read your email, did you?
He said the 12th.
Yeah?
Oh, I think I looked over it and my mind was still on the 8th.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be.
That was good because it's going to be done.
Yeah.
In case you did it.
Yeah. So, it will be handed in class. So make sure you bring that in on Tuesday of next week. 3 to 5 pages case study on educational policies and applying what you've learned thus far about utilitarianism. Also refer to your book that's in Cengage as well. If you're going to cite anything, remember it's MLA format. Citations have to be in that format. I'm going to go over with you today a format for what's called a case study. Now, this is important if you intend to take your education towards a graduate level, all right? Or maybe if you're doing some type of research even at the undergrad level, which you're now at, all right? So this can help prepare you for those things. So it's better to be introduced to something like this type of research ahead of time, and that's what I want to prepare y'all for. So I sent y'all these slides, all right? So you can get familiar with, and I will review them with you, and then we will touch on deontology, because that's what we'll be going through Thursday, Tuesday, and next Thursday for our class out of the syllabus. So what is a case study? So it's a type of a research method, all right? It's a good case study is a result of three things: collection, analysis, and presentation of the data. All right, so it's collecting your information, all right, providing a quality analysis of that information, all right, and then presenting it in a manner that is understandable, that is logical, and that presents significant information, all right? So a good case study effectively investigates a contemporary phenomenon in depth and in real-world context. And so that's why we are looking at something that is pretty contextual in real world as it relates to COVID-19, significantly happened in 2020 through 2021. And now, depending on who you talk to, has some effects even today. But even more specifically, how that pandemic impacted how institutions like colleges and universities responded to that as it relates to returning to school, admissions, and the like, all right? So, designing your case study, all right? So if you follow these things, your paper should be pretty solid, all right? So I'm arming you with the tools, with the format that you're gonna need to present a very effective case study. So, clearly state the question you are seeking to answer, all right? That should obviously be somewhere in your introduction. Clearly state your propositions the study will address. What is it resting on? All right, what are you proposing? All right, next, your unit of analysis is to consider a specific individual or institution. So you can look at Philander, or you can look at, University of Pennsylvania, or whoever, right? Consider the time period, all right? And the specific event within the larger event being discussed. So the larger event is the pandemic. The more specific event is how University ABC sought to reintegrate its students back into the university setting in the context of COVID-19. All right. Next, you do your analysis. Now, here you're going to lay out the message you're going to use, which is utilitarianism. So I'll be looking for a very cogent, succinct definition of utilitarianism that you understand it. All right. Next, taking into consideration the utilitarian calculation that we also looked at, proposed by Bentham. All right. What ethical theory are you applying? So obviously, utilitarianism. And then at the end, report your findings and your conclusions. So, does utilitarianism justify, or what are the objections to the position that was taken? Okay? So analyzing your data, all right? So the data that's been presented, all right, also dig into the location, the groups involved, because that has a significant impact, all right? Is this university, is it surprising that university went that direction, all right? Or is it not surprising that university went that direction, all right? Specifically regarding the laws, what were the policies enacted in that state? If it was a state institution, right? State-funded college or university, all right? How did those state laws or policies impact that institution? If it was a private institution, what did it take, all right? So then, obviously analyze the institution. If you can find any type of testimonies or interviews, that's also helpful as well. If you're gonna refer to any type of interviews, either video or written-wise, make sure you are citing them in accordance with the MLA format. Reporting findings and conclusions. So we get towards the end, restate your questions, restate your propositions. So a good movie, a good song, ends the way it begins, all right? Provide a summary of your analysis, present your conclusions, offer recommendations. I'll be looking for all of those elements, especially a lot of emphasis on these two. Mm-hmm. All right, so be cognizant about that. All right. What are your questions?
Do we print it out for it? Or do both?
What did it say?
I don't remember. I just remember he said 12.
Okay. Refer back to the email. All right. What other question?
Did you put this in like NJICS so we can look at it when we start the work on?
I got it. Send it to your email if you look at your email. Send an attachment.
Okay, I see.
Anybody else? If you'd like me to review a draft,
yes, please.
You can send it to me by Thursday, and I'll respond.
This Thursday?
Yes, ma'am, because it's due next Tuesday. Yeah. It was due Friday. Yeah. So it's due Tuesday. All right. Print it off. Any other questions? All right. Good deal. I look forward to reading, which I provide. Obviously, if you try to do this in 3 pages, I don't know if you're going to be able to hit it all. Right? You do it in 5, you should be able to hit it pretty good. You try to do the bare minimum, I don't know. You're riding the line. All right? So just keep that in mind. Pursue excellence, men and women, not the bare minimum, okay? All right, so we're going to transition out of consequentialism and focusing on outcomes to looking at, is the action, is it right or wrong? Not on the basis of outcome, but is it right or wrong based off of a series of rules, principles? All right, we're going to be looking at Immanuel Kant. We're going to be looking at Dr. King. We'll be looking at others, asking ourselves, is there an overarching rule, guide, the divine command that influences and can inform whether or not our action is right or wrong? So it's not about the outcome. It's not about pleasure or happiness. It's not about what's for the greater good. All right? But is the action right or wrong? Now, there's pluses and minuses, positive and negative trade-offs, obviously, to that. Because there may come a point where a decision has to be made. It could be the right decision that caused you to go against the group or the family or the religious norm or the cultural norm that can put you outside, alienated, isolated, but you're standing on principle. You're standing on the rule. You're standing on what was spoken from the religious book or from the mountain or on high. Right? But that being said, it can be so rigid, right, that to others, it can look as if you're doing more harm than good. So this word, deontology, comes from two words, all right? One, logos. Anybody knows what that means?
Logic,
right? So, word, logic, study, all right? Deon, where we get objective. All right, standard, okay? So this is a moral philosophy different than utilitarianism. Whereas utilitarianism focuses on outcomes, deontological ethics, all right, we are looking at again, or this time, what is the motive? What is the motive? So, give me an example of a time in which you would have to make a decision on the basis of a rule. What would that look like?
Going to class. That's not a rule. I mean, if you're late, some teacher have rules. If you're late, you might as well not even go.
Visiting opposite sex dorm rooms.
Okay. We'll go there.
No visitation.
We'll go there. So, no visitation of opposite sex dorm room. Mm-hmm. When?
Ever.
Oh, so it's 24 hours.
No co-ed visitation.
Okay, 24 hours.
Not at all.
Okay. What is that action or non-action based off of? Okay, yes. It's found in the handbook of rules. I got that. Why cannot a male visit a female's dorm room or a female visit a male's dorm room? Why?
I think it's based on the assumption of what's going to happen.
We're adults here.
So they don't have no seat.
Okay. So.
But that's crazy though. If we're
Hold on a second. We're getting down to why is this a right action?
Okay.
In the eyes of the handbook. All right? So, there's an assumption that sex is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, and people are having sex every day.
Exactly.
but why is this assumption a negative?
Because sex leads to babies.
No, I don't think that's it. I think the university now is trying to prevent rape allegations. So that's what I think is going on. I don't think it's really...
Assumption, rape will occur.
Right. I don't think it's strictly just babies because we're all adults here. They can't stop that. If we wanted to, we would.
Okay, so we've got three things here. Assumption. pregnancy will occur. So, sex, either... It's consensual, non-consensual. It can yield pregnancy, or it can yield
diseases.
Assumption. Disease will spread. All right. Now, okay. And... What is the rule rooted in?
The safety of the people of the college?
It might be religious, too.
So that's an outcome. Now you're going somewhere.
Yeah, it might be religious.
So what? Sex will occur? Okay. So sex can occur in one of three ways. Rape, pregnancy, disease, we could add pleasure.
Pleasure.
Okay? So, the no visitation of opposite sex dorm rooms, 24 hours, all right, has an assumption that there's a possibility pleasure will occur, a rape could possibly occur, a pregnancy could possibly occur, or a disease is possible to be spread, right? But where does this come from?
Religion.
Okay, so religion. Why are you making the claim that it's religiously founded?
Because we are a religiously...
We're a Methodist college.
Yeah, we're a Methodist college.
Okay.
So. Very religious school.
Okay. So, but what specifically about that religion?
Because
I can think of religions that don't prohibit sex.
You're not supposed to have
sex until you're married.
Okay. Well, what religion is that?
The Christian.
Okay. All right.
Muslim too. It's a bunch of other
ones. Okay. But I'm just saying, I can think of some that don't care. Yes. Christian, Islam. We'll just name the big three. Judaism. All right. So there is, within these religious texts, a prohibition of sex?
Premarital sex.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, so, Philander Smith's handbook says a right action as it relates to the visitation of same-sex dorm rooms is what? What is the right action? What's the yes. So, as long as no males are visiting female dorm rooms, as long as females are not visiting male dorm rooms, right? Those males and females are conducting a right action. But that right action is not based off of whether there'll be sex. There's no sex, there's no rape, there's no pregnancy, there's no diseases. The right action is rooted in a rule. And more specifically here, a divine command. Are you following me? Now we'll get into more later about divine command theory. But what I want you, in this exercise, what I want you to see is this, that the right action that we're going to be talking about, we need to get down to what is the rule. And where does that rule originate from? And then from there, you can understand, you don't have to necessarily agree, why some choose this action, because they're bound to a particular context that comes from a rule that comes from a particular context. Do you understand? Now, we could take out religion. It could essentially be family. And the family rule is, and it could be a secular family, meaning non-religious, all right? Doesn't care hide no hair about whether there's a God or not, right? That sex will occur between two individuals who are bound in a public ceremony of celebration. Anything other than that, we will frown upon, we will not even accept you. Now, is that one rooted in religion? No, it's rooted in a family ideal and belief system, right? Mm-hmm. But as long as that son or daughter is conducting him or herself in line with that family principle, they'll be they'll be seen by the family as doing the right thing. Do y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Does that happen in your own houses?
Yeah.
All right. The question you have to ask is, why is this a right action? And it can't just be because I said so, or because grandma did it this way and papa did it this way, right? So, there's a study of whatever the objective is.
So where does the why, right? The why for the rule. Where does experience come in? Like personal experience. So when you ask the question why, they would tell you their own personal experience. Where does that come in?
So the experience is what will essentially be codified, shaped into, formed into what would be a rule, right? So we'll move out of sex for a second. So there is this joke, right? A grandmother taught her daughter to cook a ham, right? And it was always in the same pan, all right? But they would always cut off both edges, right? And then put it in the pan. Right? And then one day, the great-granddaughter asked her mom, like, Mom, you're teaching me how to cook this ham, but why don't we cut off all this meat on both sides to go into the pan? And she was like, well, I don't know why. Let's call your grandmother, right? So the grandmother, the mother, the grandchild, yes, all got in a room together. It was like, Grandma, Mom, why do you cook it this way? She was like, oh, because the pan that we had back in the day, it was too small. So we always just cut off both edges. And the grandma, the daughter was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You just buy a bigger pan. And the granddaughter was like, yes, you just buy a bigger pan. But up to that point, it was, we've always done it this way. So that, but that became the rule based off of an experience, right? And never was it investigated until the younger asked, did a study as to why this was the right action. Then the question becomes this now. What do you do if after you study, you determine that this may not be the right action?
That's why I think rules like that are like opinions. Think about it.
I'm thinking.
The opinion that, okay, with the ham, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was the opinion that they had to cut off both sides because the pond was too small. They never really, it was almost like they was just blindly following something that they did for so long and they never asked questions about it.
Is that blindness though?
It is blindness because you're not asking a question as to why you're doing it so that you can prevent having to do it or do it a different way.
Let me roll back real quick. So it's not an opinion if it's rooted in experience.
Yeah, but it's an opinion if it's not rooted in experience and you're just blindly following it. You're blindly following an opinion because you don't know why you're doing it. Do you know what?
No, an opinion would be the daughter saying this makes no sense until she does the investigation to get some objective evidence to make a final determination. This does not make sense based off of the testimony of grandma that we just had too small a pain. Mm. So grandma had an objective reality, a small pain. She had an objective reality, a big piece of ham. She cut off both sides, drops it in. Utility-wise, you could be like, okay, right? You can look back and be like, why should I just get a bigger pain, right? Moving forward, and this is why let's test the blindness, at least in the family context, for up to a particular point, we're just taught things and we do them because we have, at some level, a level of trust with the mom or dad or grandparent who is teaching us these things.
Right.
And so it's not until you're exposed to other outside forces, information, that then you begin to shape an opinion.
Mm.
Well, why do we do that, Grandma?
Maybe.
Does this really make sense? Mm. And we'll get into Kant's categorical imperative. Well, are human beings objects? Or are we subjects?
Mm.
And if we are subjects, then why are we enslaving people? If we're subjects, why do we, we'll bring this full circle, because I asked you for your number, Ms. Duncan, and you didn't give it to me. I want to depersonalize you to the point that I'm going to take a brick and throw it at your face. The categorical imperative says, across time, you're not an object to be used for my own satisfaction. Give me your number so that I can get what I want. No, you're a subject and I have to interact with you as if I want you to interact with me. But then that becomes a rule that is not dependent on outcome, right? But it's across all time. All time. A utilitarian would probably say,
in a particular situation.
He threw a brick at her? Was that for the greater good?
No.
An ethical relativist would say, well, in our culture, if a woman doesn't respond to us, we drag her out and we discipline her. So in our culture, that was the right thing to do. In your culture, it may not be the right thing to do. Deontological ethics says, no. The right thing to do at all times is not to do violence to a human being. So we will get down into the nitty gritty of the why of these rules. Because it's been the challenge of the why of these rules that many things have progressed in different countries and across the world. Why can't a woman vote? Why can't black people be considered fully human and not as it was first put in the Constitution, 3/5? Mm-hmm. What is the right thing to do when all the country says legal segregation should be the law of the land? And yet a few rise up in the South, Core, SNCC, Freedom Riders, so on and so forth, and they say, you know what? I am a man. I am a woman. Words echoed by Martin Luther King, Ralph Abernathy, echoed by Fannie Lou Hamer. Y'all do know who all those people are, right? But rooted in an ethical theory came about by some old white dude centuries earlier called categorical imperative. It's rooted in something called deontological ethics that asks the question, is the action right or wrong based off of a set of rules? And not just rules. Is there some universal rules across all time and space that we are to follow as human beings in order to make actions that affirm human beings not as objects, but as subjects? Because an argument can be made against utilitarianism that you're looking at human beings who are supposed to have some degree of rights as human beings, that they are objects in service of other human beings. And the question is, are you? See you Thursday. Be prepared, get prepared to dig deep. And I hope the air conditioning. If you got any questions, I'll be around for a few minutes.
Thursday.
Hey, if you found something of value, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Find us on Facebook at Dr. Philip Fletcher. Find us on Twitter at Phil Fletcher. And as always, visit us on the website philipfletcher.org.